Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Play game.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only live board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and convincing yourself you don't care if you lose. I'm one of your hosts, Nate, and with me is my buddy James. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Nate?
I'm doing all right. As a reminder, you can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system of KBOO.fm. Just click on the Chat With Us button in the lower right corner of the window. And we have an impromptu special guest. We, once again, didn't have a big plan for today. We have some ideas. So we invited KBOO news director and a host of Genius Box on Fridays at 8 a.m., Althea Billings. Welcome to the show.
Yay. Wow. Hello. Thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure.
Well, it's awesome to have you here. We've tried to goad you into this by speaking ill of you, but turns out Althea doesn't listen to our show.
And now we have no one else to come on, so we're like, might as well drag her on.
I love to be, you know, bottom of the barrel, kind of last resort. Yeah, I guess I haven't. You can say the bad things to my face now, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. But first, I got a question for you. What's it like being a genius, and does it help you with games?
Being a genius, it's a lot of weight on my shoulders, and sometimes that makes it hard to pick up the dice and roll them, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think it means that I'm good at games, mostly because whenever I've played games with you two, I lose, mostly. But losing, it's not about winning, you know? I know that's, losing is not about winning. I'll say it. Nobody wants to hear me say it, but I'll say it.
The people aren't ready for it. No. I don't think so. Do you have a favorite game?
That's a good question, and one I should have thought that you were going to ask me.
Well, we've established you don't listen to the show, so you wouldn't know our standard questions.
No, this is really new, really off the cuff. I don't know. I feel like I like most of the games that you've taught me. I mean, Blood on the Clock Tower is probably my favorite. Does that count as a game in this context?
I mean, I don't think you can say that one. That's mine and Nate's favorite one, and we have that.
Athea can be.
No.
I have to be different than you guys?
You have something else. I'm putting you under the spotlight right now.
You've taught a ton of people Nana.
Oh, yeah. I love Nana. That's a great one.
To answer the question for you, you've been playing a lot of Duroc.
That's true. I have been playing that. No, yeah, it's probably, Nana at this point. Although, I think I'm approaching a level of perhaps I've played it too much. And maybe I need to mix it up a little bit. Does that happen to you guys? It must.
In Nana? Or just game
in general? Or just a game in general.
I've been playing Mythical Dice a lot because I got my family into it and they like it. And I got to the point where it's like, I don't know if I want to play this anymore. I've been just playing it so much. I'm like, it was one of my favorite games. And now I'm like, I can't do it again. I'm going to have to need a break from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty common. It's just like listening to a song over and over again. You're like, this is my favorite song. It's like, I can't listen to this. I need a big break. I mean, that's part of the reason that I wind up selling games, which is kind of a segue into one of the topics that we had, although I don't know if we're going to segue quite yet. But you just kind of like, I got what I wanted out of that game, and now it's just time to move on.
Yeah, I still think Nana is a great game, and I particularly latched onto it because I got really burned out at playing Egyptian Rat Screw at the bar. I got whacked in the hand one too many times.
Egyptian Rat Screw?
Yeah. It's the slapping game.
Like Slapjack?
Yeah, but
It's just violence.
Oh.
It's violence.
Which is fun in its own right, but
I posted on Board Game Geek once because I got myself the craziest paper cut opening a pack of cards where I just got like concentric paper cuts.
Ugh.
It was awful, and I'm sorry, audience. It really was bad. But I asked the board game community what their worst board game related injuries were, and almost everyone would cite Egyptian Rat Screw as having had an injury because people didn't take their rings off.
Yeah.
People slapped a little too hard. Yeah, it's just, it's you know, you're risking your hands in that game.
Certainly. And I thought that maybe I would come out better if I kept my rings on. I wanted to strategize on that level. And it actually hurts if you're wearing the rings too.
Is it just slapping the hands, or do you get to slap anywhere on the other person's body?
See, that's an interesting wrinkle that perhaps would get you kicked out of the bar, which is unfortunate. But
is it only a bar game?
No, we could play it right now if you wanted.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great radio. Just it's just your random just... slaps.
No, sandwich.
Althea plays with all sorts. I guess to describe it, you are all putting cards down one at a time, mm-hmm. and you're looking, if like a nine is played and someone plays a nine on top of that, you don't get to see what you're playing. You just draw it blindly off the top of your deck. Kind of like war.
Slapjack.
And then you have to slap the double nines, but then sometimes there's like a nine, a jack, and a nine, and that's a sandwich. And you can slap on that, and you're trying to take everybody's cards. You want all of the cards.
Yeah. So I would say it's a ratcheting up from war, which isn't very fun. So there's war, and then like rat screw or slapjack is more fun than that. And then, yeah, I guess Nana is a totally different game. Yes.
But you know what's really stupid about war?
It
goes on forever, but it's actually kind of exciting to watch. My kids play war all the time with my parents, their grandparents, and it's just sometimes exciting. Like, oh my gosh, a double war! Holy cow, who's going to win this one? And there's like no control whatsoever, but it is kind of exciting.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
I mean, I came over to yours to pick up my kid, and my kid was playing war with your parent. And they were doing it, and I was watching them do it. And I was like, does your mom just get everyone to play this game? It's like, oh, someone new, play war with me.
I don't think my mom cares that much about war. I think my mom just likes...
beating? Winning against little kids?
She has no control in war. So it's mostly just... she just likes entertaining the youth. Like, she's very much about engaging with, you know, young people. Making them feel seen and whatnot. I feel like I'm making my mom seem very noble.
Yeah, that's very sweet, Mom.
And she is. She's the best.
Except if she's losing.
Except if she's losing. Actually, she's a great loser. She's a terrible winner.
Mm.
But I think we went over that a little bit when they were on the show. Yeah. I wish I knew the name of that show. I could cite it or the number. But we don't number the shows here, as we've established previously.
Off
not
air.
On
there
the air.
No mics. Yeah.
You don't know.
You weren't there yet. Yeah. But...
this is the in-joke, not for the listeners.
But yeah. You're here now.
That's what you
you're
come for radio for.
So one thing I did want to talk about today is the secondary market. You talked about being sick and tired of Mythical Dice, which, you know, I've been there. We've all been there. And actually, the games that, like Nana, you can get tired of, but it's real easy just to take a break and come back to it and be like, oh no, this is great. But sometimes you want to move games on, or sometimes you're like, board games are too darn expensive. Is there a cheaper way to get them? And what I didn't know when I started in the hobby was that, yeah, absolutely. There's a much cheaper way to get into it. There's the secondary market of board games is surprisingly vibrant. People, turns out, don't want to have hundreds and hundreds of boxes in their house that are going unplayed. And if you can either turn them into money or turn them into other board games, they want to do it. So like in Portland, there's the Portland Board Game Marketplace on Facebook, and there's the virtual flea market on Board Game Geek, and just the general market on Board Game Geek. And then some stores in town also sell used games. And it's a really good way for you to sort of cycle through your games to get them to treat them like a rental. Like if you can find something cheaper on sale, you buy it, and you're like, well, if not, I'll sell it for $5 less than I got it for. And it's just like I rented the game. And it's a really good way of getting through things or getting into the hobby pretty cheaply. But I didn't know about it at first.
Are there board game purists who are like, I will never buy a game that's been pre-opened. I want the new one. There must be.
They hold their value better if you don't open them. So you have this weird, I think it's weird. I'm sorry if you're one of these people, but you have this habit of people buying new games. They don't play them, so they sit on their shelf in shrink wrap for sometimes years, and they've never opened them. And the reason I can't do that is because sometimes there's misprints in games, or there's like incomplete piece sets, and if you open it right away and find it, you can, you know, usually get those replaced. But if you wait 3 years, you don't have a receipt anymore. Then you don't know if it's an intact game. Some people will keep it in shrink just in case they sell it before they ever get to play it, which is its own sort of like twisted way of viewing the commerce of board gaming.
Like, yeah, seeing it more as a commodity to be sold rather than something to be enjoyed or shared.
Like a collectible, just on the shelf, just to look at in its nice shiny packaging.
Yeah, and some people will go all in on Kickstarters and get like all of the extras and everything just in case it's going to be worth more on the secondary market, because games go out of print, which is another thing I didn't realize when I was getting in the hobby. That just, you know, you'd be like, oh yeah, you're used to Monopoly and Clue and all that. That's always available. But games in general have a much smaller print run, and so they will disappear.
Why do they disappear? Why? What is that? If it's selling well to the point where it could disappear, why do they let it disappear?
Because most times they don't know it's going to sell well until it's selling well. And the turnaround time on games is several months. So by the time they know that it's selling well, you have to be like, oh, we need to start a new print run. It'll be a couple months shipping to get to the place. And so now you've got, you know, 3 to 5 months where the game's not available. The prices jack up because it's a super hot commodity game. And then, again, we get back into the, like, a lot of people buy games and don't open them. So people will buy the game and be like, oh, I need to have that. Price has gone up, but they still buy it. And it's like, yeah, but you probably could have just waited because you may or may not play it right away anyway. So they go out of print because they don't know. Sometimes there's rights issues where the rights just were for a one print run. I don't know exactly about this, but there's a few games, like a game called Glory to Rome is one of them, where it's had limited a couple print runs for different companies, but then the rights all revert somewhere and nobody's printing it again, so it becomes like a quote grail game that people want.
That happens with video games as well, usually with music. Like, the game loses their rights to whatever music is on there, so then it has to be taken off the shelves and you can't buy it anymore unless you have a physical copy, but digitally it's gone.
Yeah, I think it's often dealing with the artwork in some of these games, like people don't have the rights to the art. But then you get people who iterate on designs. So like Reiner Knizia does this all the time, where he's got a game called Tigris and Euphrates, and that was redone as Yellow and Yangtze, and then it was just redone as another game. It starts with an H and I'm not going to remember the name, but there's like three different versions of this game, all because the rights weren't secured for a different version, and so you just tweak it just a little bit and re-release it as something else, so people can kind of deal with that. Yeah, that's why games go out of print. But the good thing about selling games is you can just sort of use it to fund your hobby. And I had a professor years ago who was into collecting audio equipment, and he said at the time, like, your hobby should pay for itself. And I didn't really understand what that meant at the time. I was like, but you're just collecting stuff. Why would it pay for itself? I didn't think about the output part, where it's like, oh, I don't need this anymore. I can sell that. And then I can use that money to buy this next part of my hobby. And if you're lucky, some of the stuff that you get brings in more money than you paid for it, and you can fund it a little bit better. So, like, the past couple of years, I think I've spent between $20 and $50 on board games out of pocket. The rest of it has just been funded by my flipping games and
birthday and Christmas gifts.
Birthday and Christmas gifts. I don't really get that many board games anymore, because I kind of have a good level of my collection where there's not a ton that I want. But the other thing that I love involving trading games or selling games are things called math trades, which are the coolest thing in the world. And I wish math trades were in all areas of collectibles. Basically, I think I've talked about it a little bit on the show before, but basically, you put up all the games that you would want to trade, and other people are doing this too, so it's all handled online. You put up all the games you want to trade, they put up all the games they want to trade, and then there's a matrix, and you select the games that you want and what game of yours you would trade for it. And so, you know, 50, 100 people are doing this, And then the computer runs an algorithm and it tries to maximize the number of trades. And so you don't know exactly what you're going to get. You just know you're going to get something that you were okay getting because you selected you would want to get it. And it tries to maximize the number of trades. And then you just find out, like, all right, you've traded this and you're getting this back. But you might be trading something to person B. Person B is trading to person C. Person C is trading to person D. And you're getting the game from person D.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's this like super cool thing where in theory, you could trade something very small and not unvaluable and get something big in return. That doesn't happen a ton. But
is this only for board games? I've never heard of this for anything else.
I've only encountered it in the board gaming hobby, but it seems like it would be great for like trading records, other collectibles,
books. I mean, books, yeah.
But yeah, it's like the coolest system. I love it. Haven't had one done locally in a while that I know of. But they're super cool. You can do ship math trades. I just don't want to pay for shipping for anything because I'm cheap.
I was going to ask about that. How much of the sort of trading and commerce side of it are you doing? How much of that are you doing locally versus sending it to somebody elsewhere?
I do everything locally because I find that the shipping often will cut into what I'm trying to get out of it, which is cheaper
enough
games.
Money to buy the next game.
And you can push the shipping off on other people, but then you have to price your stuff lower. Because, you know, people are not going to pay MSRP for a used game. So if shipping brings it up to anywhere near that, you're just not going to sell it. So I just work locally. We got a really vibrant scene in Portland. Mm. So we can usually get things by. It does seem a little bit like everyone's just trading or selling the same things back and forth sometimes. And the market kind of stagnates until someone really undercuts prices. But you know what? It's space in your house that you get back to, which is nice. I'm going to do a quick reset. You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. I don't know why I said KBOO like that. KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with James, and this is Winner's Bias, a show about the board gaming hobby. And we're just having a chat about board games. Nothing designed here. And we're here with Althea, KBOO's news director.
Hello.
And our friend.
Yes. Upgrade.
Sucks to be you.
Did you have anything else that you wanted to say about?
I want to ask you how you knew at what point is the good time to sell your game. Like, how do you know it's like, oh, you know, I'm kind of done with this game, I should sell it, and you're not like, I just need a break from this game and I'll come back to it.
Usually it's just because I know that I have really enjoyed the game quite a lot. There's very few games that I've sold that I've been like, that I've regretted selling. I actually don't think there's any that I have. You just kind of know, like, that's just not where I am as a gamer. Or that game I had bought more for someone else.
It's not like I've won it 5 times, I've crushed every one of my friends, and now get it off my shelf.
Oh,
the
no.
Next.
You keep those games.
It's not like I've lost 5 times. My friends crush me all the time on this game. Let's get it off the shelf.
My strategy's terrible. Yeah. Everyone hates me.
This game doesn't exist to me anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like anything. You kind of just know when you're done with something. Like, you just feel it. You're just like, I don't really need to play that one anymore.
I guess you could always swap back for it in the future.
Yeah, unless it goes out of print. That's the thing. You never know if they're going to go out of print. Then the randomest games.
And then you're going to pay even more money for it again, and you're in the hole.
Well, and that's the other thing. Like, when you do have a game, like I had have a game called The Bloody Inn, and it was out of print forever. And so I got it for $20, $25. It was selling for $90. And it's like, do I just sell it? Because I'm only going to play it a couple times probably in the span. And then a new edition was announced. And then its value drops. And you're like, oh, I could have sold it for $90 and rebought it and still had a profit. So it's like, do you just always sell high when you have a game? It may or may not come back. But most games, if they're popular, come back. Popular is a loose term here.
If the games come back for a second run, it doesn't mean like the first run is more special because it was like the first one. It still goes down in price. It's not like first edition, like books or anything else. It's like, it's the same game. There's nothing different.
No, often like the first edition becomes a lesser edition because they've made tweaks to something. So they've made the gameplay in theory slightly better, or they've changed the art, and you know, they're trying not to make it worse, though that does happen sometimes, the game A Study in Emerald, which is like a Cthulhu-based game based on the Neil Gaiman story. I think that's what Neil Gaiman... Anyway, it's by Martin Wallace. Everyone's like, you need to play the first edition. The second edition ruined it. There are times where that happens. Most of the time, the second or third editions, they love making multiple editions of popular games, make general improvements, and you don't find too many people wanting to go back to the earliest editions of it. Although you do have some people who are like, I'm fine with the first edition. I'm probably that person, honestly. If I already have it, I'm not going to rebuy it. That being said, I am buying a game that I already own just because I can get it for the same price as the expansion it's coming with, that the expansion would cost. So I'm like, okay, I'll just sell my other copy and replace it with this one for the same price.
Does this trading aspect, does that enhance your enjoyment of board games, or does it interrupt it at all?
Ooh. It totally enhances. It's like its own game.
To me, I feel like, well, I get the benefit of being your friend, and I, you know, whatever you're playing, I'm playing, but I feel like it would stress me out.
It can be a little stressful, but mostly it's just like a game within the games. Like, I've often thought you could probably make a board game about this process. And yeah, it's just fun. You're like trying to price things right and seeing what people get. And then sometimes you get, it's like, I can't believe this isn't selling. What's going on? I'm blah, blah, blah. Or sometimes people post the same thing that you're selling and it sold for like $5 more than you sold it for. And you're like, well, why didn't they buy it for what I'm selling it for? It's like, you know, it's just, so it is a little confounding, but it's largely fun.
I'm gonna say it does sound like a board game hobbyist thing to enjoy. The people who are gonna enjoy this are the ones who enjoy board games.
Yeah, that's true.
I think ultimately it's just nice to know that, like, most things, when they run their course of use, you kind of just like, well, I guess this is going to the thrift store. Like, you just drop it off. And it's just nice to know that, hey, there's a chance I can get something back for this because the market is there for people to want this stuff. You know, it's just good to know that there's a place for it instead of just being thrown out or just being dropped off at like a Goodwill or something. So, James, did you want to talk about anything today?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up, it's nothing big, but I just want to bring up like how many people are making their own games and how it kind of blew my mind a little bit. Because before I was in the hobby, years and years ago, when I was just a little James and I was watching YouTube, I used to watch someone and they, at one point, they made their own card game. Years ago, I can't remember, this was what, 15 years ago? And I was like, can you just do that? You can just decide. You can't do that. There's games like Monopoly and Life. Those are the games you play. You don't just make your own games. And it blew my mind that he was just able to make his game, make his own rules for this game, go out and sell the game. And I was like, that is insane. And now that you've thrown me into the hobby, and like for my birthday, you got me Numberang, which was made by our friends. And like, so I'm like, I'm realizing how many people,
Alex and Cardner,
are just coming out with their own games all the time. And I'm like, how are these people doing that? That is insane. That's not a thing in my head that you can just do.
Have you ever had a game idea that you were like, have you ever had an idea?
No.
Okay.
Start there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think my brain works that way to the point where I can come up with new, like, I like the Lego that has the instructions. I'm not like the Lego movie who makes their own stuff. I'm like, I want the instructions for the Legos. I want to build what it tells me to build and how it builds it. I don't want to come up with my own things. I'm not good at that. So that might be why I can't, in my head, come up with the idea of a new game where there's just new rules that come out of nowhere and you have to design it perfectly to make sense in every single direction that it works. It just doesn't, it's insane to me that people do that, and people do it all the time.
Althea, as a puzzle creator, how do you feel about this?
I know what you mean. Mm. I taught myself to write crossword puzzles, and that's how I feel about, if you ever play like the escape room in a box, like Exit the Game, I love those. Those ones blow my mind. How did you come up with this? What do you mean I have to pour water in the box to reveal to reveal the next like leg of the clue? But I started doing it. off of, you know, an interest in it and the ability to mail it to my friends. I think that's kind of liberating, you know, because I think, I mean, we've talked a lot about the economics of creating a game, of a board game or something like that, but you can also just like print something at the library and mail it to people. That's what I do.
Yeah, and I think like when you're immersed as immersed as the people who are creating the games, like you can't not start thinking of things as they're like structured. You know, you're learning so many rule sets. I have friends who the main drive for playing games is to constantly be playing new games. They love learning rules. And so if you're always absorbing new rule sets, you're seeing how things fit together, you're seeing how things work and don't work, and you start inevitably thinking of like, what would I do differently here? And once you have that what would I do differently here mindset, then you start thinking like, well, how would I implement this? And you start, like, I have several different game ideas that I have tried to make. They're functional. I don't have the drive to like actually test them all and work them out, but like I think most people who get deep in the hobby start thinking in terms of like, yeah, I do want to create, like it's like, yeah, there's ideas in there. So maybe you just haven't been in long enough.
Maybe I just gotta like find my lane, like if it should be a card game, or maybe I'll make like a really hard In the Deep game just to make you play it, to throw you in the deep.
Yeah.
See if you can do it. It'd be the most insane rules that make no sense. Just sense to me.
I would love to see what this looked like. In fact, I'm going to fund stuff. This. I'm going to be your benefactor here.
Just give me paper and cardboard and I'll pair
and
of
I just
want to
see what this
yeah,
looks like.
Some crayons.
But also, I think there's a lot of people who are just like, oh, I've got an idea. And they go with it. It's not like they were actively seeking it out. They're just like, oh, yeah, there's something here. And let's see if I can make it. So it just takes a moment of inspiration.
But yeah, I wasn't like, I was just kind of like, just coming at it in a way of like, this is great. This is an amazing thing that people can do. Just go out. It's like when you don't know how to write books, like, I mean, I don't know how to write books. It's kind of insane how people can write books.
Yeah.
It's the same, like, they just churn them out and they can just do it. It's the same that with board games for me. I'm like, I didn't realize people were just making their own. And now I'm like, I don't know how they make their own. And it's just amazing that people do that. And I think it's great in the hobby and everything like that.
I think it's amazing that people are able to do it well.
Yes.
Like that.
Yeah. And it can go on the shelves and people and the is able to be bought and people understand it and it works.
Yeah. Like, something that lived in your brain yeah. is now yeah, getting yeah. enjoyed by other people.
Well, I can't wait to play James Deep End game.
You gotta call it James game.
James
obviously.
Game. James what? Deep Game.
James Deep Game. Uh-huh. Coming out in quarter 4 of 2026.
Oh, you're pushing it a little bit. Feeling the stress already.
But I think we got to wrap things up here so James has time for his outro line. So thank you, Althea.
It's
so
nice
having you here. Thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org. And you can find us on Instagram at winnersbias. Right, James?
Yep.
I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBU is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. Just go to kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but how you keep buying new games with no thought on selling them. Have a good one. Hey.